I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's January 30th, and we have a lot to talk about. Faith Bigham was diagnosed with MS in 2014, when she was 12 years old. She didn't know what MS was because, well, why would any 12-year-old kid know what MS is? But Faith quickly learned, and just a year later, she had already become an ambassador for the MS Society of Canada. Now, the initial years of Faith's MS journey weren't easy, and I'm not sure how someone of any age who had less resilience might have handled them. But I'm pretty sure that next to the word resilience in the dictionary, you'll find a picture of Faith Bigham. And I promise you, there are some things about Faith that are going to surprise you. But before we get to my conversation with Faith Bigham, there are a few other things that you should know about. I want to remind you that the National MS Society is offering a free virtual program devoted to the health and well-being of people affected by MS. The 2023 Pathways to Wellness in MS virtual program focuses on emotional, spiritual, and social wellness. During this program, you'll hear from experts on the current research in positive psychology, mood disorders, and stress management. You'll learn how connections to nature, religion, or mindfulness can positively impact your quality of life. And you'll become empowered to identify healthy relationships while learning strategies designed to strengthen your personal relationships at work, at home, and in your community. Pathways to Wellness in MS takes place online from 1 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, February 9th. If you'd like to learn more or register for this free program, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Many people living with MS experience limited or weakened muscles in their hands and wrists, and this can make daily routine tasks more challenging than they ought to be. L'Oreal, the largest cosmetics and beauty company in the world, is developing adaptive products designed to make the task of putting on makeup more accessible. Just a few weeks ago, the 110-year-old company introduced the first product in this line. It's a smart lipstick applicator called Hapta. Now, Hapta is designed to work with lipsticks from L'Oreal's Lancôme line, and using real-time sensors and self-leveling technology, it provides a steady lipstick application. Now, to a non-lipstick wearer, this may seem like it's no big deal. But as someone who watched his wife stop wearing lipstick because MS made it impossible for her to apply it, please trust me when I say that this is one of those little things that carries with it a huge personal impact. An impact that goes directly to issues of identity and self-esteem. The kinds of issues go right to the core of who we are. So this represents a pretty significant step forward in empowering people who are living with disabilities to claim or reclaim a small piece of who they are. L'Oreal has also offered a preview of its Brow Magic technology, which brings augmented reality to your eyebrows. First, an app scans your face and then uses augmented reality to make personalized recommendations for choices of brow shape, thickness, and effect. Once you apply a primer, the Brow Magic device uses 2,400 tiny nozzles to brush over and paint your eyebrows. Those eyebrows can last up to 2 days and be taken off with regular makeup remover. The Brow Magic device is expected to launch later this year. The gut microbiome contains the bacteria, fungi, parasites, and viruses that make up the trillions of microorganisms that live in our gastrointestinal tract. These gut microbiota play an important role in the development of our immune system and in our body's immune response. And since MS is itself a misdirected immune response, researchers are working to better understand the relationship between the gut microbiome and multiple sclerosis. While it's been shown that the makeup of the gut microbiome is different among people who are living with MS, it isn't known how or when these differences first occur. So a research team studied the gut microbiome of 20 young people with pediatric relapsing remitting MS and compared them to 20 young people without MS. The average age of MS onset was 13.6 years old, and 80% of the study participants were girls. The analysis of the gut microbiome showed that differences in gut microbiota were already present. Among the young people with MS, the research team found higher amounts of methane-producing genes and related proteins that convert molecules to methane. Now, higher levels of methane have been associated with constipation, which is a very well-known condition to many people who have lived with MS for years. The research team also found fewer lactate and short-chain fatty acids producing genes which suppress inflammation and regulate development of the immune system. The research team also noted differences between the young people with MS who had already been on a disease-modifying therapy and those young people with MS who hadn't yet started a DMT. Those young people who had been on a DMT were found to have more enzymes that produced a metabolite in the colon called butyrate. Interestingly, butyrate has anti-inflammatory effects and also helps to regulate the immune system. There were additional differences between the group of young people with MS and the group of young people who didn't have MS, and these differences indicate that the gut microbiome among people living with multiple sclerosis may be disrupted in its function, and that can have profound implications in understanding how MS develops. If you'd like to review this study, I'm going to include a link to a friend of the podcast, Sharon Roman's blog, titled Tremlett's MS Research Explained, where you can read a plain English report of this study. And for those of you who want to dive a little deeper, I'll also include a link to the published study itself in today's show notes. When I think about young people who are living with MS, I'm comforted by the thought that kids have incredible amounts of resilience and adaptability built right into their systems. And resilience and adaptability may be the two most important ingredients when it comes to the recipe for living well with MS. My guest today may be the living embodiment of resilience and adaptability. In a moment, we'll meet Faith Bigham. Faith Bigham is 20 years old. She was diagnosed with MS in 2014 at the ripe old age of 12. Welcome to the podcast, Faith.
Thanks, John. It's nice to be here.
So let's start right at the beginning. You're 12 years old. Sure. What were the circumstances that led to your diagnosis?
So it was actually a pretty crazy build-up of what was about to happen. So MS is a stress-related disease, and it's usually brought on by a traumatic event or a stressful event. And for me, I had my dad almost pass away because he got bit by a poisonous spider. And then right after that, he almost lost his arm because of it, but thankfully he didn't. And then about 2 weeks later, if not a little bit more, my grandfather, who was like my best friend, passed away. And that was extremely, extremely hard on me because it was very all of a sudden. And 2 weeks after he passed away as when my MS reared its head. So I was at home and it was summer and my uncle and his new girlfriend were visiting. First time ever meeting her, poor girl. And I woke up with vertigo. And I honestly thought that there was nothing to it. Like, I was the kind of girl who was just like, oh, you know, brush it off, keep going. And as the morning went on, I think it was about an hour later, I had double vision as well as vertigo. And still not wanting to say anything, I was trying to be tough. And my grandmother came over as well. My mom was at work at the time. And basically, I had vertigo, double vision, and upbeat nystagmus all at the same time. And they realized that I was acting really weird and like covering one of my eyes and not walking very well. So I told them what was going on, and they took me to a walking clinic in Kelowna here. And when he finally convinced me to open my eyes, because I wouldn't, because I was just immediately sick, just because everything was moving so quickly and there was so much going on, he got me to open my eyes and immediately told me to go to the hospital. So my mom rushed me to the hospital, and I was sicker than a dog the whole time. And I ended up being there for maybe 4 hours before they decided to airlift me to the Vancouver Children's Hospital. And from there, I got spinal taps done, blood work, CT scans, MRIs, every test under the sun that you could name. And they were treating me with the steroids because they didn't really know what else to do. And finally, all the results came in. And this was maybe a week and a half after being in the hospital there. And having no answers every day was really hard. But my dad ended up coming down from back home, but down to Vancouver as well while I was in the hospital. And I'll always remember this night. The doctors came in with the nurses, and they told me that they had some news that they needed to share, but they wanted to talk to my parents first. So the nurse stayed with me, and the minute that they left the room, I knew something was wrong. Like, I knew it. I didn't know what it was, but I knew something was wrong. So they leave. I'm talking with the nurse about horses, because at the time I was a show jumper and dressage horseback rider, so I would travel and do shows. So I was talking to her about that, and we were laughing, and you know, I was trying to keep a brave face on when I was really unsure about the next steps were going to hold. And my mom and dad come back in, and my mom's crying, and my dad's almost in tears. And I was like, my heart sank. I had no idea what was about to go down. So my mom sits beside me, and the doctor tells me that I have MS. And at the time, I had no idea what MS was. I've never heard of it before, never experienced it. To me, it was just two letters in an alphabet. Like, you know, and I was immediately terrified, but I didn't know what I was terrified of. And that was the worst part. So after that, I decided I was going to try and learn everything I could about MS. So I knew what to expect, and I knew what was wrong with me. And after that, it took me a while to come to terms with the diagnosis, because it's hard at 12 years old to realize that you're that sick, right?
I think it's hard at any age. When you have when you get that diagnosis, but oh my goodness, as a 12-year-old, I can't begin to imagine how you even process that kind of information.
Yeah, it was tough. I'm lucky because I'm lucky. It's a blessing and a curse. I have other autoimmune diseases as well. Like, I have juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. I got diagnosed with that when I was 4. So I've been around the medical system since I was born. Like, that's all I knew. And I had to grow up really quickly being in the medical system the way I was, because that's how you survive. Like, you learn to process things, you learn to deal with it, and you learn to use it to push you forward in life and not hold you back.
I think there's more wisdom in that statement than I hear from an awful lot of people who are well past the age of 21. So I think the very fact that you can reflect on things that way and draw those conclusions kind of tells us, yeah, you for better or worse, and I hope for better lately, you've been in the system for a while.
Yeah, exactly. And thankfully with my MS, I had a really bad relapse about 4.5 years ago. But since then, I started a new medication, and I've had zero issues with my MS, which has been super exciting.
So tell me a little bit about that relapse that you had about 4.5 years ago.
Yeah, so I was 16 at the time, and I was working like crazy. I was a stable hand at a arena that I was riding at. And I was running around trying to see family and do school and friends and really pushing myself to the limit, which is something I've always done. And I was about to do a big performance in school. And so we were meeting at the theater every day. And I woke up one morning and the left side of my face, about under just under my eye and the beginning of the side of my nose, was numb. And I thought maybe I just slept on it weird. I didn't really think much of it. And then didn't say anything the next day. More of the left side of my face is numb. Still don't say anything. Then the third day, I wake up. I have the worst ringing in my ears where it's so painful that I'm crying because I am in so much pain. And the entire left side of my face looks like I had a stroke. So I had the droopiness, I had no feeling inside of my face, slurring words, was in a really bad spot. So off to the hospital I go, which I was a regular there. They knew exactly who I was by the time I got in the door. And they air ambulanced me back to Vancouver again for Children's. And I started doing treatment there. The steroids weren't really working very well. And I ended up losing the taste on the left side of my mouth as well. So I couldn't taste anything or feel anything. And they kept me there. They did the steroids. And then they did plasmapheresis, which was scary. So I had lines in my hip and couldn't move at all. Like not even a centimeter. Because it could move those lines out of place and it would be an issue. So I was bedridden for almost a week, completely flat, couldn't move at all. And that worked. And at this point, I was actually also in a pageant at home. I was in the Lady of the Lake Miss Kelowna pageant. So I was ready to come home, and I had an event coming up for that. So I was just being stubborn and pushing my way through and left before I should have. And I told them I was fine, but I was still feeling a little rough. And I get home, we fly home. I'm home for literally 24 hours. And I wake up in the middle of the night, horrifically sick. I can't open my eyes, can't move. Had to call the ambulance to come and get me. End up back at the hospital in worse shape than I was before. I can't walk. I can't move anything on the left side of my body. Lost all the hearing on the left side of my ear. It was really, really bad. So off to Children's I go again. And they kind of were looking at me like they didn't know what to do because steroids weren't working. And we were going to do another round of plasmapheresis. Did that for a longer stint. That didn't work. And really, at this point, they looked at me and they're like, we have no idea what to do. There is nothing else that we know what to do because we have no answers. We've never seen this before. And hearing those words was crushing. You know, at 16, thinking that I'm never going to be able to walk again. I'm going to be different. I'm going to be weird. I'm always going to be judged before people even know me. And that was terrifying. But I used that to make myself believe that I was going to get better, that I wasn't always going to be this way. Because you fall into that mindset, you never are going to get better. You got to push through that and believe that you're going to get better. It's going to get better because that's how you get better. And they were talking about doing a bone marrow transplant and all these super intense surgeries and stuff like that. And I turned around and woke up one day and I was fine. And all my symptoms were getting better. I was learning to walk again. Everything got better once I changed my attitude. And I got to come home. I worked on my walking and I still do. But, you know, to go through that and come out the other side stronger than ever is something that has really, really formed me into who I am.
And I guess after that, you decided to become an ambassador for the MS Society of Canada. What was it that made you want to engage with the MS Society?
Yeah, so I actually got involved with the MS Society the following spring after I was diagnosed. So I got involved with them. I did the MS walk, and then the MS bike was coming up. And I decided to reach out and find resources just because I didn't know anybody else who had MS. Nobody in my family had MS. Like nobody knew anything about it. Nobody could support me, or as much as they tried, and they do support me, it's just different. So got involved with the MS Society thanks to my MS doctor at the time, introduced me to them. And basically got involved with them and asked if I could just volunteer, and then kind of told them my story about being diagnosed so young, because I was still only 12 or 13 at the time. So it was a fresh diagnosis still. And they asked me if I would do a speech at the MS Bike. And that was the first time that I was going to be talking about my MS in front of people ever. And I said yes, because I knew that this is an opportunity that not only was going to change my life, but it was going to make a difference in other people's lives. Because just because they might not have MS, they're still involved. Like, you know, they're giving up their time, their energy, you know, it's worth something to volunteer, to be a volunteer or ride in the event or put together the event, and to be able to hear someone share their story about MS makes you feel a little bit less alone, whether you have it or not, because you know that there is somebody out there that understands your struggles, that understands the bad days and the good days and the judgments you put on yourself and everything in between. And that's why I do it, is because I want to make a difference. I want to be the support that I never had. I want to be the voice that I never had. I want to be the opportunity to provide the answers that I never had and never got. I was the guinea pig, and I was okay with that, because being that guinea pig, being that person that I went to Toronto and did clinical studies and tried medications after one after another, like I did everything I could to give some sort of answer to the next family, to the next person that got diagnosed, so that they didn't have to feel the fear that I felt.
Let's switch gears for a minute here. This might relate to feeling the fear or not. You mentioned a few minutes ago that you were about to enter a pageant. I know you've entered pageants. That's a pretty girly thing to do. I think that if someone else heard that, they might draw a conclusion that you're a pretty girly girl. And then, yeah. and then if they got to know you better, they might reconsider all that.
Yeah, exactly.
You have a pretty interesting hobby that I know you're very engaged in and really serious about. Can you tell us about that hobby?
Yeah, so I'm actually also a hunter. So I hunt big game animals. I actually started hunting the fall I was diagnosed with MS. I started off with just a small gun with, you know, shooting small animals like grouse, which are just wild chickens, and moved on to deer and moose and elk. And I actually, we're in the middle of cougar season right now. So I have cougar hounds. So we've been out running dogs pretty much every day, or at least checking tracks every day. I use my MS to push me in those moments of hunting where there's moments where you just want to break because you've been trying so hard and working so hard and out there every day, grinding up at 4 o'clock in the morning, back home at midnight, like working as hard as you can sometimes. And you come home empty handed, and that's okay, because it's not about killing something. It's not about going out there and just shooting something. It's about the memories. It's about the people. It's about food. Like with my MS, I found that grocery store meat made a huge difference in how many relapses I was having. So with my hunting, having all natural meat, it made a huge difference where I actually stopped having relapses and was feeling way better. So it's a source of relief for my MS, and it's a way for me to come to peace with whatever I'm feeling. If I'm scared, if I'm happy, if I'm angry, if I'm sad, it's an escape to just know that you're somewhere peaceful. You're somewhere nobody can get to you. Nothing matters. It's you, your decisions, and the bush, and that's it.
Well, you mentioned cougars. What other sorts of game have you hunted?
So I've hunted pretty much everything. I've hunted deer. I've hunted moose. I've hunted elk. I've hunted mountain goat. I've hunted bears. I've hunted bison. The only thing that I actually haven't hunted in North America is caribou, grizzly bear, and sheep. But my next hunt is actually going to be a sheep hunt. So I'm slowly checking off those boxes. And I actually have my elk on my couch right now. My elk skull, because it doesn't fit in my house very well. But it's been I've hunted a lot of animals, and it's a big learning curve for each one. Like cougars are different from lynx, which are different from deer, which is different from moose, which is different from elk. You learn to speak all the different languages of all these animals. You learn their behaviors. You learn everything. So you're constantly playing this learning game and keeping your mind sharp, which with my MS, I found it's huge, because I keep my brain involved, and it has something to do. It has a job. So it doesn't, in my mind, it doesn't want to attack itself if it's working, right?
You know, as diagnosing MS becomes more accurate than it used to be, we're seeing more kids and teens diagnosed with MS, which really wasn't the case when you were diagnosed. If you had the chance to talk to a young child who had just been diagnosed with MS, what would you say to them?
You know what I would say is I'd say MS doesn't have to be something you have to be afraid of. Use your MS as a superpower. Because MS for me is my superpower. It's my strength. It's what gets me out of bed every day and pushes me to be a better person. And I'd say that to them, and I'd tell them that it's not going to be easy. It's not always going to be fun. There's going to be hard moments. There's going to be times where you're going to want to crash. And that's okay. It's okay to crash and burn. But it's about how you get back up and how you move forward. And that's what's going to make you break it, is just keep one foot after another. It's second by second. It's not minute by minute. For us, it's second by second. And it's all going to be okay.
So let me ask you a slight variation on that same question. What would you say to that child's parents?
I tell them that it's going to be a hard road. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be scary. It's going to be unpredictable. It's going to be all over the map for emotions. But being there by their side and being real and not sugarcoating it, not hiding the truth from them, not hiding the facts, being honest with them, learning about the disease, and just knowing that the support and the love from the community that we have makes a world of difference, and that nothing that they're going to do is going to make it worse. Just be there, love them, support them, and make sure that they take care of themselves too.
So Faith, you've been around for almost 21 years now.
Yeah.
You've spent a disproportionate amount of that time, especially as a youngster, in hospitals.
Yeah.
Where does your mindset come from?
My mindset comes from being in the hospital, and I've come from a lot of challenges growing up, whether it be personal or medical. I've had an adverse growing up of constant challenges, constant hurdles, always having another obstacle to climb over. And if I let those obstacles get in the way and I broke and I gave in, I would never, ever be the person I am today. And those moments and those hurdles and those hard moments and good times and bad times and laughs and cries, those are what formed me into who I am. Those are the times that make you a stronger person, that make you who you are. It's not the easy times where everything is good and easy and there's no challenges, no stress. Those aren't the times that are going to make you who you are. It's how you handle the bad times and the uncertain times that make you who you are. And moving on and moving forward is the hardest thing to do. But if you do it with a smile on your face, even if it's fake for the moment, that's how you move on and that's how you get better.
Well, Faith Bigham, thanks for all you do to help others in your role as an ambassador for the MS Society of Canada. And thanks so much for sharing your story with me today.
Yeah, thank you so much, John, for inviting me onto your podcast and to chat with you. It's been amazing.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/283. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.